So, as we were saying earlier, to God, sometimes our storms feel, to him perhaps, like a storm in a teacup, because he is the awesome God. It is amazing that he does not belittle our troubles. And so I really want us to focus on that slide that you saw, and you'll know we're making good progress as you follow it. That the storm is real, but Jesus is in your boat. And your boat in that storm is in his hands. And I hope this morning that you will, whatever is going on in your life, tell him, trust him, and take heart. And so let's have a look at this second point this morning. The storm is real, but he's in your boat. We've been going through Luke in recent weeks, and the drumbeat has been this. Jesus keeps challenging people to hear what he says, to see what he's doing, and respond. So we see the centurion who sees Jesus' power when the religious leaders can't. The blind see, the lame walk, those with leprosy are healed. The dead even are raised. And women like Mary Magdalene and Susanna and Joanna see who Jesus really is. And it sparks them into remarkable service that puts others who should know better to shame. And that's why then Jesus talks about the lamp. It should not be hidden, it should not be shaded, but shining. And he says, if you hear my words and you put them into practice, you are my family. You are like those women. They are the seed in the good soil. Hear and do. Hear and do. That's what it looks like to be a follower of Jesus. That's what it looks like to be family, Jesus is saying. So this morning, are we? Are we his family? Are we seeing and doing? Do we hear and do? Well, in 2022, and I'm a bit of a geek, I like my data, I apologize in advance. It's probably why I do the job I do. Benedin Health did a survey of 2,000 adults in the UK, and they said, what is it that are the most stressful things that you have ever faced? And this links a little bit back to what Ben was saying a few weeks ago. And the top 10 reads a lot less like a survey and a lot more like a shipping forecast for the human heart. Losing someone you love. Money, the months where there just isn't enough. Trouble at work. A relationship that is struggling. Divorce. Exams, moving house, even watching the news has made it into the top 10. And if you read that list, I'd be surprised if there is anyone in this building who can't tick at least one of those off the list. Some of us this morning are in a force 10 storm, and probably the person next to them doesn't even know. We come nicely dressed or fairly nicely dressed, and we smile, and sometimes we don't say what's going on in our life. And yet inside, the klaxon is going off, red alert, storm warning. The Bible never pretends that life will be anything other than that. So when we read that Jesus is asleep in the middle of this storm, you can rightly understand why the disciples are going, what? Really? And I can understand the storms that you're going through now might cause you to sometimes feel, Where are you, Jesus, while my boat is filling up? Why me? Why now? How am I going to survive? Can I really trust this person called Jesus if this is what happens? And where's Jesus in verse 23? He's asleep, dead asleep, in a sinking boat. And do you know what? The funny thing is, the only calm thing on the lake is Jesus. The wind is howling, the waves are heaving. These 12 grown men are shouting and they are fighting for their lives. And Jesus sleeps. And out comes the prayer that lives under the prayers of many of us. Master, Master, we're going to drown. It's kind of more a statement, isn't it? Or an accusation than a prayer. It kind of underlies, don't you care? Aren't you worried? You know, we're professionals and we're very worried. They're not saying, are you strong enough? They're asking, do you even care? You see, they take his rest for neglect. He's asleep, so he must have forgotten us. And now, a bit like break glass in emergency, all else has failed, and they're going to Jesus. And we can do the same, can't we, sometimes? In the middle of our storm, we decide that the silence means absence. The prayer isn't immediately answered by Friday, so he obviously doesn't care. But we misread his rest. You know, why can he sleep? I'll tell you why he can sleep. And it's not because he doesn't care. It's because he isn't worried. It's a shock, isn't it? Because he made the sea. He holds the oceans in the palm of his hand. To the fishermen, the squall is a tempest. To him, it's a storm in a teacup. That sleeping place in the stern of the boat is one of the most outrageous acts of trust in the Bible. Because here is the Son of God sleeping away because he knows that his Father has got it all under control. There was another man called Jonah. He slept because he was running away from God. He was the problem and he had to be thrown into the sea in order to save others. But do you know what? Here we have someone greater than Jonah. They weren't the problem. They were the answer. And they were resting in perfect peace. The storm is no threat to Jesus at all. In fact, in a few chapters' time, we're going to see an amazing person, Jesus, enter an even greater storm. And he's going to rise and conquer death itself. But for these disciples, right now is all they can think about. Nothing else matters. They are panicking in the storm. And they're not alone. Read the Bible and you will see account after account after account of people in the storm. Storms of their own making or simply the weather of a broken world. So, patiently bear with me as I give you the call of the drenched. Jonah, a good example, entirely of his own doing. He'd run from God, he'd boarded a ship going in the exact opposite direction. The sea came for him. But actually in the belly of a fish, in the darkest and gloomiest place that a prayer has probably ever been made, he calls out to God, and God hears him. David, another amazing self-inflicted storm. Bathsheba, the cover-up. The death of a good man to hide it. He is not an innocent victim. He caused it. And when it broke over him, he prayed, have mercy on me, God. And God forgave him. Job, the storm was nothing to do with him. We read that he was a blameless man. He'd lost everything, his children, his health, his good name. And what did he do? He argued. He wept. He accused, but he did it to God's face, not behind his back. He shouted at God rather than walking away from him, and he never, never stopped trusting God. And God met him in the whirlwind and answered his prayer. Peter, in this very lake, is going to have another storm. Not of his own doing, ironically, obeying Jesus again and stepping out of the boat and onto the water. He sank and he says three words, "Lord, save me." It's not the most beautiful of prayers. But do you know what? It says, with his mouth full of water, he's struggling. And Matthew says, Jesus caught him immediately. And then there's Saul. His storm was self-inflicted too, the years of slow drift from God. And now the Philistines, they are massing on the ridge, and he is absolutely terrified he is going to get destroyed. And what does he do? He prays, and there's silence. And he makes the same mistake as the disciples. Silence means God does not care and is not listening and is not interested. But what does he do? Does he go and wake up God and besiege him and ask for his help? He goes to a witch and tries to get her to raise a dead man in order to get some kind of message. And by the next evening, he's dead on Mount Gilboa. Look at the list. Some of them, they sailed into the storm with their own stupidity. Some of them sailed by sheer obedience. But actually, it made no scrap of difference to the rescue, because Jonah prayed from the fish. David prayed from his guilt. Job prayed from clenched fists. Peter prayed from a mouthful of water. And not one of them had their prayer go unanswered. It was only Saul who didn't ask. So whatever landed you in your storm, whether you came looking for it or it came looking for you, that's not the question this morning. It's who you cry out to in it. He's not asleep because he doesn't care. He's in your boat. Listen and do. Listen and do. His rest is not neglect. When his storm rises, pray first. Don't leave it to the last. But even if you have, pray now, because he will still delight to answer. If you don't know him, Jesus is not irrelevant. Don't wait for the storm to talk to him. Go to him this morning. Ask him to forgive you for living without him in the boat. Ask him to come in and help you. Share your fears with him. Trust him. And he will do amazing things. It kind of felt appropriate for us to sing an incredible hymn before we go into the last shorter section. These are the words of a hymn writer who was a Chicago lawyer. He'd lost his son to scarlet fever. He lost all his properties in the great Chicago fire of 1871. And then 2 years later, his daughter and his four daughters and his wife drowned on their way to Europe as they were sailing ahead of him. The storms were real, but he knew that Jesus was in his boat. So the disciples, they wake Jesus, and this remarkable thing happens in verse 24. He got up and he rebuked the wind and the rain, and the storm subsided and all was calm. And that word rebuke is exactly the same that Luke has been using for how Jesus rebukes the demons and the fevers. Jesus doesn't pray to God and say, "Father, would you mind easing up the wind a bit?" He is standing in a sinking boat, soaked to the skin, and he speaks to the storm like you might speak to a dog. "Sit." Or even like he did when he spoke the world into being, and he said, "Let the water under the sky be gathered to one place," and the gathered water he called seas. This is the detail that the fishermen just couldn't get their head round. All was calm. Because if you know anything about storms, even if the wind stops, the quail carries on for some considerable time. And yet here we are, 1 minute washing machine, next minute dead flat. This is creation recognizing the voice of its maker. And what's interesting is the storm ends so suddenly, but the fear doesn't. Notice the fear switches from the storm to Jesus. Suddenly, it says, in fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this?" He even commands the winds and the waves, and they obey him. But they've swapped a small fear for a right fear. In Greek, delos, panicked fear of drowning, becomes phobos, reverence, astonishment, awe of Jesus. Luke's kind of handed us the answer already. Psalm 107 says this, "They cried to the Lord in their trouble. He stilled the storm to a whisper. The waves of the sea were hushed." Who stills the storm? The Lord does, and only the Lord. Shock news, guess who's in your boat? And the Lord of Psalm 107 is fast asleep in the boat and is now dripping wet. They'd been sailing with him the whole time. He was not absent. He was not powerless. It wasn't that he cared. He wasn't out to ruin their life. He's not out to ruin your life. He's out to show you who he is. And if you trust in him, he promises to get you to the other side. Now, as preachers, we often try and avoid personal examples in sermons because we don't want to make things about us. This is such a difficult and a sensitive topic that it felt like borrowing examples from other people felt wrong. And so I think I wanted to share with you that when we go through these passages, we have to preach them to ourselves. Who will you trust? When I was bullied in school for having an Irish accent, when my daughter suffered eyesight issues that I could not fix, when my mother died at 53 of pancreatic cancer and my sister was still in school, when a house caught fire and we were out of it for 2 years and we had break-ins and thefts and so many difficult things at our lowest point, when I was made redundant and I couldn't find a job quickly, and the finances were running out, when my young sister's partner died of cancer at 37, leaving her 7 months pregnant with 2 children. How can I make sense of the storm? How can I make sense of the hurt to the ones I love? But the storms are real. The Bible does not duck it. And I have learned that so is Jesus. He doesn't promise it will be easy. And he doesn't promise things will always go our way or that we'll always understand. But he promises he will always be by our side in the boat. And like this teacup in his hands, the sea and the boat are also in his hands. He's brought me through the valley of the shadow of death so many times. He has given me the green pastures when I needed it. I know that he will bring me to the other side. Because there was one storm Jesus did not calm. Years later, on the hill outside Calvary, outside Jerusalem, the storm broke. And it wasn't wind and it wasn't waves. It was the judgment of sin. And the psalmist's words came true. "All your waves and breakers have swept over me." And in that storm, the only one who could actually sink you and me forever, the only storm that could end us, Jesus did not stand up and say, "Peace, be still." He let it sweep over him. He took the full consequences of that storm so that you and I do not have to, so that we do not have to face death and eternity without God. Remember Jonah, thrown in the sea, so that everybody else could live. Here is the greater Jonah, thrown willingly into the storm of God's judgment that you and I could be brought safely to shore. Three days later, the greatest calm on Easter, an empty tomb on the far side of the only storm that could really ruin us. Death subdued, conquered. So Jesus turns to these disciples and he doesn't say, "You've got no faith. You failed." He says, "Where is your faith? Where did that go when the waters came over the side and your awesome skills couldn't rescue you? Where had they put it? Look at what they did when the squall came. They grabbed the oars. They bailed for their lives. They threw all their seamanship skills at the storm. And only when they could not rescue themselves and their strength ran out, they turned to Jesus. Their problem was never a shortage of effort. It was that they hadn't grasped who was in the boat. What's your seamanship? What's the thing you grab first when things get difficult? Do you use your money, your competence, your skills? Try harder. Your ability to just sheer determination, get through it? Or do you just blame the storm or others? Circumstances? But the storm can show us where we are putting our trust. Into the oars that we have slowly drifted towards and off the Lord of the sea. You see, a tiny faith in an amazing Savior will carry you through anything. And great confidence in yourself will sink you in the shallows. It was never the size of the faith. It was the object of the faith. So to be clear, Jesus is not saying you don't need to do any work as a Christian, just put your feet up and trust me and I'll sort the storm out. No, he's given us brains, resources, wits. He expects us to row. As somebody who knows, he commands the sea and he is the boss of everything. He is the maker of everything and he will bring us safely through. So to close, I began by saying, what did you come here trusting him? Because here's where the whole passage lands. Trusting Jesus will not shrink your storm to a teacup. It didn't for the disciples. It won't for you. It won't for me. What changes is who holds the cup. If you're drowning, tell him. The prayer in the boat was a bit of a messy one, but he stood up and he answered it. If you followed him for years and you're going through difficult, difficult times and you white knuckle holding onto the oars, trust him. Move your grip. And if you've never trusted him this morning, trust him and take heart. Say to him, "Jesus, come into my boat, into my storm. I am trusting you, not myself, not others. Hear and do. Hear and do." Will we? Will we trust him this morning? Or are we holding on to stuff and going to him when everything else fails? The storm is real, but he's in your boat, and your boat is in his hands. It feels really appropriate to close this morning by singing, "He will hold me fast," because he will.